Chapter 2. You have a thing for him, don't you?
Who are you talking about now, John?
I see the way Jack looks at you, and you look at him.
You mean your friend Jack Roberts? Oh, now I know you've lost it.
John Tilson sat with a blanket across his now useless legs, looking out of his apartment window.
John, look, I love you. I married you. But if you keep up the pity party, then I'm going to stay with my mother. Do you think your tragedy only happened to you? Well, I am here, and...
I don't want to go to dinner tonight, John said, interrupting.
You're just being silly now. He is your friend, and he wants to be with you, and you are going. Besides, you don't have a choice. I am the one still walking here, and I can push you, you know?
Oh, very funny. Besides you, Van Johnson had this done. Everyone did, and everyone is sitting on it. He doesn't scare me, John said as he continued to watch some children run and play in the park that was located just across the street. I want to go out for a bit, John said as he maneuvered his chair to the front door.
Alone?
Yes, I will be back in an hour. Then we can meet Jack for dinner. Sherry Tilson stood as she watched her husband fumble with the door to try and close it behind him. She made no move to help him. She knew her husband well, and that would only anger him. So she stood and watched as he managed. He had changed so much since the shooting. He was such a confident man. He was the pride of the police department, and now he was a cripple. Even though she would not say it, she felt it in her heart. He was nothing more than a cripple. A cripple in which she would have to take care of for the rest of her life. She remembered the day he proposed. He was so sure of himself. He took her to a Mets game, and on the big screen he proposed. And of course, she said yes. He was so handsome, he always kept himself physically fit. He had the bluest eyes and the blondest hair, and the jawline of Superman. He was perfect in her eyes. And then she received the call that would change both of their lives forever. The call came in at 3:30 in the a.m. She was sound asleep, and as soon as her cell phone went off, she knew something bad had happened. John had been working with detectives at the NYPD in conjunction with a felon that John Tilson had apprehended. The felon was a member of the Van Johnson crime family, and a case the detectives had been working on for years. When word reached Van Johnson, bad things began to happen, and one being that John Tilson was shot from behind on what sounded to be a routine security call. Officer Tilson was called to an apartment building for a security check. The caller claimed someone was lurking around the back of the building. Officer Tilson answered the call, and once he was behind the building, someone opened fire at him from his backside. He was hit dead in the spine. The felon was eventually released. Some say it was after several detectives and judges were threatened. The crook was found dead 3 days later in a dumpster on the Upper East Side. Case closed, but not for the lawyer that was working with the DA's office, Jack Roberts. Jack was brought on by the district attorney. When Jack was approached by a member of the Van Johnson family, he wanted to retain Roberts as the official attorney of Van Johnson. However, Roberts declined the offer. Then the DA's office found out about Roberts and asked him to aid the police and the DA in bringing down the family. Roberts did. However, when John Tilson was shot, he, like all the others, backed away from the case. Now the only ones that are working on bringing the family down are the ones that work in private and under the radar so that the word will not reach Matthew Van Johnson. She remembered how close he was to death. Sherry Tilson stood outside of the operating room, waiting against hope that word would come and say he would make a full recovery. But that was not the word that was given. No, the word was his legs would be of no use to him, and she would have to forever change diapers and lift a 150-pound man into bed every night. Her life and his was over. She watched as her husband wheeled himself down the sidewalk. The kids that were playing stopped to stare at him. They all knew him. He had played ball with many of them, but now he was pushing himself down the walkway, hanging his head in disappointment. Deep down, she knew she was not cut out to take care of a man. She was the one that was supposed to be taken care of. They had not had children, and now she knew she never would. But would her love for him override her fears of being a beaten-down woman who did nothing for the rest of her barren life but take care of a helpless man? She could feel a tear swell in her eye. Maybe John was right. Maybe she was falling for his best friend. After all, he was a tall, successful man, and he was strong and could easily take care of her. But what would happen to John? He would not be able to survive if she left. But he had survived a bullet to the back. He would survive. And besides, she was still young. Yes, she could easily move on. No child had damaged her figure yet. She would do it. It would be hard, but after dinner tonight she would leave, and he would be fine. But what would everyone say? She is a quitter. She left when times were difficult. So what if they did? She left when he needed her the most. Even so, if she could find a good man to take care of her, then she wouldn't care what people thought, even friends. Heck, she would find new friends.
Yes, it is settled,
she thought as she turned to head into her bedroom. John stopped his chair by the edge of his favorite thinking place. It was a nice, quiet place by the water. He had come here many times to clear his head, but this was the first time since he was shot. He looked into the water, and he could see the small fish swimming around, darting in and out, living their meaningless lives, waiting to feed a much bigger fish. Then he noticed some debris, some wooden planks floating just to the right of his foot. The wheelchair will be hard to maneuver in the sand, so he just kept it on the pavement. Then he noticed something laying on one of the wooden boards. It looked like some sort of necklace. John stretched his arm as far down as he could, but he could not take hold of the leather that was curled on the wood that was floating only inches from the shoreline and his fingers. He then caught a glimpse of the jewel at the end of the strap, but it wasn't a jewel. It looked to be a tooth of some sort. Now his curiosity was piqued even more. He had to grab hold of this necklace, this wonder of the sea, this thing that had taken his eye. All of the years he had traveled to this shoreline, he had never found such a thing, and now he cannot even reach it. Then he looked just above the broken wood and the debris. In the water, he saw something move. It was several feet from shore, but it was big enough to catch his eye. Then he saw it. A fin. A shark's fin. Another first for him. Then the creature that swam only feet away moved suddenly, causing the water to rush up to shore. And then there it was, the thing he coveted but could not obtain. The tooth fell against the wheel of his chair. He looked down at it. Then he looked up, and the giant beast was gone. But after all, it is only a legend. Roger, I am fine. How's the cleanup going? Jack said into the receiver of his cell phone. Well, they are extraditing Davis tomorrow. He was wounded pretty badly, but he will live. Everything else is falling into place. I will give you a full report when you return. By the way, when are you coming back?
I've been planning this trip for months now. I have not seen Roberts in a while. I think I will stay and catch up some more, Jack said as his words were interrupted by a knock at the door of his hotel room. Let me call you back, Raj. Someone is at the door, Jack said before pushing the red N button on his phone. Manson then made his way across his lavish hotel room and pulled open the door. He looked into the hallway, only to see a slight Oriental man holding a long cane standing in front of him. How can I be of service? Manson asked. That's when he noticed that the man was blind.
You are Jack Manson?
Yes, I am. Won't you come in? Jack said as he stood aside to let the smaller man pass by.
Thank you, sir,
the man said as he swung the long cane out in front of him. The man made his way toward the center of the sitting room before turning his attention in Jack's direction.
What is it I can do for you? Asked Jack as he approached the blind man.
No, sir. It is what I can do for you.
I don't understand.
I am here to finish your training.
I am sorry, but I still do not understand. What training are you talking about?
The training that my father began in you.
Is this some sort of joke? Because, sir, I have never seen you before.
The things which I am going to reveal to you will be both amazing and impossible, but they are indeed facts about you and your many lives.
I have to be at dinner in a few hours, and
Look here,
the old man said as he held a folded newspaper out to Jack. What is this? Manson asked as he took the paper in hand.
The date. Read the date,
the old man urged. Jack looked at the date. 1893. London Herald. Where did you get this?
Read the main story,
again the old man urged. All right. The mystery behind the missing girls of London may have been explained, Inspector Jack Manson has been quoted as saying. So, you think because this inspector and I have the same name that we are in fact the same person?
Look to whose his assistant was,
again the old man pressed. Along with his assistant, Roger York. Okay, now that is a bit strange.
In the 40s, you came to my grandfather looking for death after the war, and he taught you our ways, the way of Aikido.
You mean the martial art? Interrupted Manson.
Aikido is not just a martial art. It is a way of life, a way of philosophy. And my grandfather was teaching you this when you were called away and became a police detective in the 50s.
You can't be serious. I was a child in the 50s.
No, you were not. My grandfather was so intrigued with your whole soul that he followed your life and saved clippings and charged me from his deathbed to seek you out and finish your training and help you heal your mind and let it remember about all that you have done. Because your journey will end soon, and then I believe it will begin again.
But what about Roger? He was there in the 50s with me? You do realize all of this sounds crazy.
Yes, I know how the words sound before they leave my lips. However, it is all true just the same. And as for your friend, he was with you all the way, but served only as a deputy in the beginning, and then through fate, again, became your partner. My father and I believe he is the key somehow. None of it is really clear, but the facts are you were there,
said the old man as he handed Manson another newspaper, this time dated 1962. The title page read, Have the Russians Landed Here in Detroit? Manson took the paper and read the first few lines, then sat down on the couch that was in the center of the room. Jack Manson led an investigation into the murder of an FBI agent and a post-war scientist that turned up on the shore of our city. Manson looked up from the paper. He let it fall to the coffee table that sat in front of him. The paper fell with a photo from the story facing up, and there on the page that was discolored with time was the face of Jack Manson.
Now, will you let me help you?
Jack looked to the smaller man for several seconds. He could not find the words, and then said, I don't know.
You are a very special man, as is your partner, Roger York. Let me help you complete your training, and together we can open your mind.
But how and where? I mean, I have a life here, stammered Manson.
We will make the time. I will help you.
What if people ask about you? Who do I say you are?
I am simply an aide, nothing more. We need to find out what purpose you have for having lived so long, and yet with no knowledge of having truly lived these lives.
Manson looked back to the newspaper once again. This was in Detroit, and I can see Roger in the background. Who wrote the story?
I have not read it, of course. I was born without sight. However, my grandfather has read it all to me. I believe his name was Carl Colvin, and he was a friend of yours as well.
How did you find me here?
I first began in Detroit. Then I found out you had traveled here. I went to the police station, and they said you were on business in New York, so I tracked you to this hotel.
That's pretty good for a blind man.
I felt we needed to meet one another as soon as possible. Something is going to happen. I feel it. And you need to know who you really are to be able to withstand the events that are coming next. And together we can explore it.
Well, I hope it's not going to happen before dinner, because I have plans, and you're coming with me, Manson said as he stood to his feet. And we need to save these papers. Roger will never believe any of this, Manson said as he turned to exit the room.